Welcome to Podcast Ed, a podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to Joanne Glenn, Pasco County's 2020 Principal of the Year and a founder of Pasco eSchool, the district's virtual education program that has blossomed into one of the state's largest. The mastery-based model of Pasco eSchool offers learning flexibility and the ability to adapt to the needs of Pasco's 77,000 students in the midst of the global pandemic. The two discuss this model as the future of public education, how to eliminate inequity and digital divide, unbundling services, and more. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode. So I'm excited today to have Joanne Glenn with us. Joanne is a bit of a superstar. She is the 2020 Pasco County Principal of the Year, and she's also been named one of the three digital principals of the year by the National Association of Secondary School Principals. So a lot of wonderful honors, Joanne, and I know they're well deserved. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful spring.
Real quickly, because not everybody in the country knows about Pasco County, where are you located? And you're in Florida, of course. And how many, what's the student population?
So Pasco County is a district that sits just north of Tampa. We are a suburban bedroom community for downtown Tampa and St. Petersburg. Our student population is 77,000.
Wow.
And yeah, so we're a fairly large district by Florida standards and even nationally. And so it's a very exciting environment to work in and innovate in.
Well, you have been an extraordinary innovator in Pasco and in Florida. You built the eSchool in Pasco from nothing to one of the most impressive eSchools in the country. Talk a little about where you guys are today. Talk about how the program functions, what your enrollment is, how you deal with content, et cetera.
Pasco eSchool launched in 2009, and we are the mechanism by which our district meets the state requirement to offer both full-time and part-time virtual instruction for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Over the last 12 years, our program has grown, and we have partnered with district schools to allow students to not just take an online course to meet a state graduation requirement, but to develop a customized schedule. Our students have a lot of flexibility to build in virtual coursework as a part of their school day, to take a la carte classes outside of the school day, and through expansions in legislation, we actually can serve students who live outside of Pasco County, elsewhere in the state of Florida. So we're proud to offer not just the courses available under our franchise with Florida Virtual School, but our team has also written courses, and we have licensed courses from other digital content companies so that we can truly bring courses into our county that expand opportunities for our kids.
Well, that's amazing. Sounds very entrepreneurial. Talk a little bit more about the FLVS relationship, the Florida Virtual School. So you use their platform, is that correct, their learning management system?
We do for our secondary program. That was probably one of the most important strategic decisions that we made as we opened. Florida Virtual School offer districts the opportunity to open a franchise, which simply means that we use their content and their platform, but we hire the teachers and supervise them. And Florida Virtual School provides training and technical support. And that allowed our district to open a program that had over 150 courses available.
Wow.
For students in grades 6 through 12. And that relationship has only grown and matured over the years. And now we actually have the opportunity to offer their elementary courses in our franchise agreements. And we have also been able to help shape some of their development decisions and give voice to the needs of our communities in that process.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So you offer their content with your teachers. You've also developed some of your own content, and you license other content that you provide through your platform.
That's correct. And we began that, honestly, because the graduating class in 2012 had to have a fine art credit. And as a K through 12 school, we had to provide all of the courses students needed to earn their high school diploma. And there wasn't any sort of fine art credit available online in the Florida Virtual Catalog or elsewhere. So that actually began our journey into course development. And from there, we added American Sign Language. And we were the first Florida district to have that available for students. That was important in our district because we had only 3 of our 15 high schools that offered American Sign Language.
Wow.
So the decision to invest in the development of that program let all students in our district have access to that course of study and to meet their world language requirement.
Wow, that's fantastic. Obviously, this spring was a fairly eventful time for you. Talk a little bit about the transition. It sounds like you guys were a little ahead of the game because you had such a robust platform in place and you had such a history in your school district. What will instruction look like in the fall? Will it be, first of all, is it a competency-based system? Will kids be all at the same place at the same time? Or are you anticipating kids sort of all over the place? Is it a lot of synchronous or asynchronous instruction? Give our listeners a feel of what that might look like in the fall from a teacher's perspective and from a student's perspective.
Sure. So Pasco was one of the first districts to begin releasing reopening frameworks for our community. And we engaged in dialogue with focus groups, parents, teachers, building level administrators, and settled in on consensus around 3 primary models for our reopening. The first is, you know, more of a traditional back on campus operation that will be as close to normal or what people think of as normal as possible. We do know, however, that it isn't going to be like COVID-19 never happened. There are going to be some pretty strict safety measures in place to try to limit anyone's exposure to COVID-19 or really any of the other bugs that run through schools during cold and flu season. So there are a lot of aspects of how we move students through campus that will be changing, a lot more attention to hygiene and sanitization of high touch and high volume areas in our schools. So there is definitely an appetite for that experience still. We also offered 2 online options to our families. One of them is Pasco eSchool. And our model has always been a mastery-based or competency-based model that allows students to work at a pace that matches their learning needs. We do give them sort of a minimum pace chart because there are expectations for how much instructional content students should master in a school year.
Right.
But they can work faster. And from day one, they have access to the entire catalog of the course for the whole year. And so that does meet the needs of some students. And many families felt very comfortable picking that as a choice because it offers more flexibility. Our students do not have to be online at a specific time. They can set up their school day at home and have the opportunity to chunk their time and maybe work on subjects in an alternating schedule. It gives a lot of control.
Right.
And so that is a really strong thing. And then that third option is an online option where our bricks and mortar teachers will load content onto Canvas for students who are learning from home, and it mimics the experience of our students who are on campus in that they will be covering the same topics at approximately the same cadence or schedule, and it's going to include a more synchronous model of webinar contacts along with online assignments and instructional activities.
So I'm a social studies teacher teaching 10th graders, and I've got a class on campus Would I also have some kids in that class who are also virtual? Would I have students in my class who are both on campus and virtual at the same time in my third period class?
The way we're envisioning it now, not quite. Although I will say that a huge piece of information we needed was knowing how many students were interested in each option.
Right.
And so our families had to complete a survey to let us know what they felt comfortable with. And we understand certainly that could change, but it gave us a starting point.
Right.
So what we found in Pasco was about 2/3 of our families really wanted their kids back in schools. And so we're working to then, you know, adjust our plans to make that as safe as we can make it. We have about 20% who want this synchronous digital model. And then 10% chose Pasco eSchool, the more flexible virtual model. So the way that we envision the middle model, we call it My School Online in Pasco, because the kids are still attached to their physical school. If you're a social studies teacher, as you mentioned, you might have a first period class where all 25 of your students are physically in front of you, but you might have a second period block in your schedule where your students are not in front of you. So that will be the time at which you'll conduct your synchronous webinar sessions. That's when you'll attend to grading their work, answering email communications, that sort of thing. And then you might go back to a face-to-face group for your third block in your schedule and so on.
Okay.
Some schools may have the capacity to have teachers that are completely dedicated to their remote learners, but we think that most of our schools are going to have staff whose schedule includes a blend of on-campus and off-campus learners.
So my first period class is on campus, all 25 kids, and on a Tuesday, it turns out that three of the kids in the class tested positive for the virus. So now suddenly I'm probably going to quarantine that whole class. So that whole class now goes to distance learning. How does that work? My first period class used to be all 25 on campus. Now it's all 25 off campus. How's that going to work?
That's actually a really great question. And the group that started right as we ended last school year set a pretty high bar to develop a plan that was flexible enough to account for all of those sorts of scenarios. So our teachers are right now undergoing a lot of training to be able to build their content that they'll use in their face-to-face class and for their remote learners so that they're parallel. So it really will be fairly straightforward to take groups of learners who may need to be isolated until we are sure that it's safe for them to return, as well as the teachers
right.
who would have also been in those environments,
right.
and just simply have everybody stay home. But the instructional continuity is already built in because we've been cultivating that for our remote learners all along. And so we see scenarios in which, you know, if in your class, Doug, if three kids test positive, it might not just be your class that stays home because they have siblings.
Right,
so
right, right.
It could be a whole bus load. It could be a building. It could be a few classes. And this model that we're building in the background will flex to accommodate more learners because we have a system in which every student is automatically enrolled in the Canvas shells that hold the instructional content. So really all we're changing is their location.
Yeah, not to get overly complex here, but I could also imagine you made a really good point, which is kids in my class test positive. I'm also going to have to be quarantined as a teacher, which means my fourth period class, which was also an on-campus class, suddenly lost their teacher. Right. So
right.
Then you're going to have somehow, somebody's going to have to cover my fourth period class because I'm no longer on campus because I'm also quarantined with my kid. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, flexibility is going to be the key word here, I guess.
It will. But, you know, in that scenario, if the teacher has already got the digital content, the fourth period kids can continue with the lesson, but they'll have to have an adult that supervises them. But it may not need to be a certified teacher that's there in that room necessarily. Certainly, that would be the best case scenario. But the teacher could still, you know, interface with the kids over the webinar platform and deliver instruction or load recorded direct instruction for the students to still be able to learn even though the teacher is not physically on that campus.
You know, Joanne, it feels like I've been doing education reform work for 42 years, and it feels like in 4 months we've made 20 years worth of progress. I mean, the things that you're talking
about. I
think
I have the gray hairs to prove that.
The things you're talking about, if somebody told me in January, this is what's going to be happening in the fall, I would have said, that's impossible. That's just, I mean, that's so much social change, you know, the change management process, that's so much change, there's no way that, and yet what you're doing is you're literally doing things that I would have said in January would take 20 more years, and you're doing it right away. It's really extraordinary what you're doing.
I think I am lucky to have had a group of leaders in our district who could see that vision. It was a shared vision, right? I came into the room thinking hurricane days,
right.
But we could see so many other applications. And then as it became really clear that COVID-19 was going to impact the operation of our schools, we really were excited to realize that we had a lot of the pieces in place already and had a pretty good handle on where our gaps were and were able to make up ground. And then I think it's important to note that we didn't let off the gas pedal, right? We didn't consider it to just be like, well, we survived that crazy quarter four. We thought, let's keep going, because this gives us the opportunity with our teachers to really make their work in professional learning communities meaningful.
Yeah.
We can co-plan and we can use the power of that learning management system to help us really understand where our kids are struggling and where they have mastered content. And it will really drive the conversations around what are the next steps for each group of learners. So I agree with you. I think it helped our teachers and our building level administrators realize that because this situation forced us to kind of all get in the foxhole together and talk about what types of activities were best, what we were seeing with our students, we don't really want to give that way of work up. And so whether the content is what eSchool uses or it's content that our teams build, we're having the right conversations about our students and their learning. So that's exciting to see.
So I want to take advantage of this opportunity, having one of the country's great visionaries. I want to talk a little bit about 5 years from now. What's going to happen? What's it going to look like in 5 years? I mean, will more content integrate with virtual reality, augmented reality? We'll be using artificial intelligence to help manage all this. You're somebody who's thought way in the future for years now. What might things look like in 5 years?
I 100% believe that we will see more use of augmented reality and virtual reality in our schools. We're already seeing that in pockets. So, for example, things like virtual science labs. We have some simulations in some of our career and technical education courses that allow kids to experiment in a hands-on way using digital content first and then go and apply it to an actual physical object. So I do see that we're already beginning to make those moves, and I think that's going to continue. I do see that as we have all been challenged in quarter four with COVID, we're starting to question how we can make the best use of face-to-face synchronous contact with our students and how we can leverage technology to take care of some of the measurement of how kids learn and let us really focus in on who are the students that we maybe need to pull into small group instruction. Who are the kids that are ready to take off? They're ready for enrichment or acceleration. And I think that over the next 5 years, I know in Pasco County, you're going to see us thinking differently about school scheduling and how we leverage the on-campus time versus the, just the required foundational pieces that kids need to acquire to be ready for more of the application. So we're building those plans into some of the new facilities that we are designing to open in Pasco County.
Wow. you know, there's a lot of data right now showing that a lot of the inequity between kids really happens outside of school. You know, affluent families are spending, I think the last stat I saw was close to $10,000 a year on out-of-school learning experiences. And of course, a lot of children's families don't have even close to those kind of assets. Do you think some of the technology and capacity that you're developing might allow us to address some of the inequities out of school, that we might be able to provide kids with learning opportunities during the summer that they may not historically have been able to have? And I mean, the gap in terms is so huge between affluent families and less affluent families in terms of out-of-school learning. Have you thought about how this might affect that issue?
So we have actually had a lot of conversation about that in our district. And, you know, we were recently recognized by the College Board for our work in equity and expanding access to challenging programs. But that work for us starts much earlier. We run some summer experiences for students in our Title I schools that are not remedial in nature. It does exactly what you describe. They are summer camps based on science and reading and writing that give kids the types of experiences that students in more affluent families have and take for granted. I see us maybe being able to leverage technology to expand the reach of some of those programs, to maybe do more of the remediation during the school year, and then maybe repurpose some of our funding to expand those opportunities. But one of the realities that we were confronted with in quarter four was the digital divide, and it's very real across the country, but in Pasco County, we have areas of our district where there is not access to high-speed internet. It's not that families can't afford it. It's that the providers aren't there. And so, you know, when I think 5 years or 10 years in the future, in Pasco, we have traditionally had a penny for Pasco, a tax that our citizens vote to use to invest in infrastructure projects and our schools. And I wonder if in the next round of planning for Penny for Pasco, if we couldn't look at infrastructure for internet as a possibility for the use of that funding.
You've been very generous with your time, but I had one more other question that popped into my head while you were talking. A lot of aspects of our economy, you're seeing what I call unbundling. That is services that used to be part of a bundle, you know, so whether it's, you know, cable TV and, you know, now I can buy Netflix and not Disney, or Disney and not Netflix, I can have those choices. And as you were talking, I was thinking about you're selling courses to kids outside of Pasco. I'm wondering if you thought about the fact that you may be able to unbundle some of your services and offer all kinds of options that families historically haven't had, because it's been one-stop shopping. Have you thought about that? I mean, I've, as you know, Step Up for Students has, we have 130,000 kids in private schools, but I can see private schools purchasing services from Pasco in areas where, you know, you have a lot of strength and they don't. Is that something that you've ever given some thought about?
Well, I think it's already happening. And I think we see some examples of that in our home education community, where families, you know, have the best of all of the universes. They can take a la carte courses from their district virtual programs, from Florida Virtual. They have, you know, co-ops and even just, you know, private businesses like music studios and other things offer enrichment opportunities. We've partnered with your organization to advocate so that students on a McKay scholarship can take two courses from their district programs, because we had courses that they couldn't get from the statewide program, and we were successful in advocating for that as well. So I do see that as a trend, and I think that families are looking to be able to take advantage of opportunities like that. And just like with any industry, I think we also have a responsibility to help educate the consumer of those products to look for quality. And I know that you guys do that, and we do that as a school district as well. But I see that as a trend that we should be keeping our eye on as well. because when families are looking elsewhere from their school district for their core instruction, that doesn't mean that we don't have things that they would like. We just have to figure out a way to make that available. And it's challenging us to grow and think about the ways that we do business too.